It's Friday, July 29th, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today we're talking with Jeffrey Smedberg of the Santa Cruz Public Works Department about e-waste. And of course, it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, after Spot of Geek News, we're speaking with Jeffrey Smedberg of the Santa Cruz Public Works Department about community resources and responsible manufacturers and how to get in contact with them for e-waste management, recycling, and reuse. During the second half of the show, so basically how to get rid of your computers sanely, effectively, and good for the environment. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join a conversation. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Let me go through the list. Let's see. We don't have Miles yet, but he's going to be here momentarily. We have Sean Cleveland, Senior PR Marketing Manager for NetCell. We have John Tracy. Now, John hasn't been on the show for months because he had a new job, and he is now a support specialist, I would say.
Support engineer.
Support engineer at, help me out.
Surf Control.
Surf Control, thank you, which is the same place Miles actually works. And Chris Dunphy, former director of competitive analysis for Palm Source, but now a rogue agent. Welcome for
retired layabout bum. Yes.
That's the other way. That's the other way to talk about it.
With wings.
Yes. Ooh, yeah.
And Miles Elam, I think, will be here momentarily. I'm sure he's running up the stairs. And our guest today is also here in the air room, but we won't be speaking with him for another 15 minutes because we're going to be doing some geek news. So Jeffrey Smedberg's on, and if Jeffrey would like to join the discussion on anything you might be able to add some enlightenment, please do.
Thank you.
We're going to start the news today with John Tracy.
Yay. Today is Systems Administrator Appreciation Day. So happy Systems Administrator Appreciation Day, everybody.
Woo-hoo!
Or as we say in the sysadmin business, it's SAAD Day.
Oh, that's so sad.
So hug your favorite sysadmin
so
today.
So if you're a computer administrator, network administrator, internet administrator, telephone administrator, voicemail administrator, database administrator, email system administrator, or mainframe system programmer, or people just ask you a lot of tech questions.
Or all of the
happy
above.
Happy System Administration Administrator Appreciation Day.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of times, yes, all of the above at once.
Was this declared by Congress or?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. It's actually pending a national holiday.
Right? I have the day off.
Yeah.
I didn't get anyone a card, sorry.
John, you actually have the day off, and that's kind of what you do.
But yesterday was my wife's birthday.
That's why you have a day off. And that's why you're on Geek Speak, and we so appreciate you being here. And now I'm going to go on to somebody else, like Sean Cleveland. Sean, you as well. Welcome and thank you for being here.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, would you like a news story?
No, thanks. Okay, let's go on to... Yes, Sean. Please tell us what's going on in the world.
So Panasonic has announced a new battery, which they say is the most significant advancement in battery technology since the alkaline was introduced in 1965. Whoa. It's just kind of apropos because we're talking about recycling here, and you know, if these batteries last longer, then you don't have to recycle. Called OxyRide, they claim the batteries last twice as long as traditional alkaline batteries.
Same output, so you can put them in whatever uses a regular D battery?
Yep. It just has a longer lifespan.
I have kids, so this is really important to me.
Ooh.
So they expect to come out in four-pack AA and AAA sizes. I guess now. It looks like they're available. No, they're bringing to market. They don't have a date. But the suggested retail price is going to be competitive with current batteries.
Oh, excellent.
Wow, that's a revolution right there.
So
if it really does what it says it does.
Right. But look for Panasonic OxyRide batteries.
You know, speaking of batteries and recycling, that all home batteries, of course, should be taken to recycling, not thrown in your dumpster. So get a plastic bag and start putting batteries in there next time you go throw it in recycling. And if you have one of those blue dumpsters and it's in a plastic bag, I believe this is true, you can put it in the blue dumpster. So.
And today we can find out why you need to do that.
That's right. We will in just a moment. But first, let's go on to another news story. I'm going to go with Chris Dunphy. Chris, hi. Welcome.
Hi. One of the hot things in the news this week, and some of you might be getting bitten by this, is Microsoft has turned on piracy checking in Windows Update. So if you're getting a new, you know, the Windows got the Windows Update feature in it. If you've got an illegal copy of Windows XP, it will now...
Disable?
It will now check to make sure that you have an illegal copy, and if you do, it will say, hey, help report the piracy. Where did you get this copy? Who sold you your computer? Help us gather evidence. In return, we'll send you sell you a legal copy of Windows for half price.
Wow. Now, will they give you the update anyway, or are they not give the update?
You will not get the update unless within 24 hours of Microsoft turning this on, there were very simple instructions posted online of how to disable this check. So, so the real bad people, as always, you know, still get away with it.
But the point that Microsoft's trying to fight is not the people that are cracking themselves.
Right.
It's the people that bought a new computer. Right. They thought they got a legal copy, and yet Microsoft never was paid for it.
Right.
So they're in the dark to having a legal copy.
And so these people actually probably would appreciate finding, like, oh, crap, I bought this from, you know, random
or Joe. Some other expletive that's not so offensive. yeah, definitely. I think it makes sense that Microsoft did this route. And, of course, the hackers are still going to hack it, or the crackers are still going to crack
it. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much for the update. So if you see that warning and you're, you know, one of your friends or down the street helped you install your machine, don't scream at them too much. Just talk to them calmly, and they'll tell you, go ahead and buy
it. And it actually is pretty nice that Microsoft is giving you, if you help us with this, you get to buy a legal copy for half price.
Right. So. And if you're waiting for the next version of Microsoft, which is Vista, it's going to be another year. So you might as well buy XP now.
Right.
Well, maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, if you're using XP, of course, pay for it.
You need it.
Thank you very much, Chris, for that update and information about Microsoft's new checking. And John, I'm going to pop over to you. It's so good to see you here. Even though I can only see half your face over the console, it's nice to see you. And what's the next news story from you, sir?
I've got one from ESA, which is the European Space Agency. Their Mars Express is a imager currently orbiting Mars. It's on its 1,343rd orbit, found a crater on the North Pole that has frozen ice, water ice, which is different because we haven't actually found frozen water ice.
Every fourth story of Mars is, we found frozen ice on the polar cap. Is it true now? Can
this
we
is
accept
significant
it?
Because it's in a zone where there is no more frozen carbon dioxide. It's all sublimated. So this is
ice,
the only thing
accessible
left it could be is liquid ice, and spectrometer images confirm that. And it's they don't know exactly how much is there. But the
enough to see some space.
It's in a crater that's 2 kilometers deep. And they say from the surface of the ice down to the bottom of the crater is 200 meters. Now, that could be that there's a dune underneath it that's projecting it up some. But it's a significant find.
What's the diameter of the
they don't say.
Frozen pond?
But it's fairly large. You can go up to esa.int and look up there. There's actual images up there.
The real amazing thing was they actually found a Zamboni circling around the ice.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, John, for that. Sean, hi.
Hey, so this is kind of interesting. Philips Electronics is a very large producer of LCD TVs. Usually, when a flicker, you know, your television starts flickering, tells you that there's something wrong. Well, they figured out that a flickering strip light, instead of calling for a replacement in LCD TVs, it can actually help the TV overcome what's called ghosting or image smearing. So with LCD TVs, if you go into a store, a lot of times they're just showing drama movies, you know, just not a lot going on. The reason is because high-speed sports like baseball, tennis, those sorts of things, they show this problem much. Yeah, if you see it, it looks very blurry around the moving object. It's because the little pixels in an LCD TV can't keep up with the high speed required to show that picture going across the screen. So what they found is if they take this flickering, maybe this flickering could actually help with an LCD. So what they've done is while the backlight is off, they figured out that they can, the flickering light will switch on only when the image is ready. It creates a brighter image than normal to compensate for the dark period.
Okay.
And they can show high speed images just fine. They don't because the problem is the little LCDs, the diodes, they can't make them fast enough, so they're having to come up with new ways.
The backlight.
To, Yeah, it is, but this might be the future of LCD technology.
I thought these backlights were done with a large backlight material that does the entire span of the screen. I guess now it's not done that way. It's done with individual backlights.
Yeah, it's individual.
Okay, so they're just going to add the backlight into the mix, and they're going to be fluctuating the backlight as well so that when black comes on, it turns off.
Pretty much.
Which would make it a lot blacker.
A lot of people who have LCD TVs see this phenomenon, and it's not so much fun to watch. And although this new technology is a major improvement for LCD screens, something we'll be seeing next year, possibly in all LCD TVs, they're still saying that a CRT screen, your typical television screen, is still better. So be aware of that.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
Interesting technology.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. All right, we're going to go back over to Mr. Tracy. Hey, John?
Who's shaking his head? The only other thing I have is that the Mars rovers are still going, which is significant if you remember last year, they were set up. Spirit went up and landed on July, and Opportunity landed in February. They had a 90-day mission lifespan.
Wow.
It's now a year and significantly longer than 90 days later. So they've been going over a year past their warranty. And they're still both going strong. They're still both returning scientific results. And I just thought that was significant because they were done as a reduced cost probe.
Yeah.
So they were less expensive. Sending both of these up was less expensive than the Viking probe. And they have outlasted what they were supposed to. And
great.
And it's also significant because about 50% of missions to Mars fail.
Right. And so you want to make it each mission small and cheap.
and make it count when it works.
I would love to know what kind of battery they're using. Wow.
Rechargeable.
Yeah.
So I have a quick story. The RIA announced yesterday that they are going to send out 765 new lawsuits to internet thieves across the U.S. They're emboldened by last month's decision by the Supreme Court that said file sharing networks can be held responsible for their users' actions. So they're going after people in addition. 176 defendant lawsuits were filed last week in 25 states. So, the RIA is still going after people who were file sharing.
The music industry is still going after file sharing.
Yeah.
All right. Good to know. Well, we are pretty much done with news, but since Miles just showed up, I want to give him an opportunity. Hi, Miles, by the way.
Hi, good morning.
And Miles, thank you very much for putting up all the e-waste information on our site so that people can know what kind of companies are doing the resources and stuff. I appreciate you doing that last night. Since you got to sleep so late and all that, did you get any news for today? Do you want to cover this?
Yes, I did, but I have some more pressing news.
Okay.
For anyone, this is a traffic report, actually. Anyone taking the Ocean Street exit off of Highway 17, avoid it like the plague.
Okay.
It took me an extra 20 minutes to get here.
All right. So 17, the fish hook is tight right now.
Well, the fish hook isn't. Like, if you're taking... Well, okay.
Which way are you coming? You're coming on Mission going down?
If you're going down Highway 1 South, it's not a... Or Highway 1 North, I should say. It isn't a big problem. It's getting off on the Ocean Street exit.
Ah, okay. Now, this, of course, is very clear to me that we don't do news and we don't do traffic announcements very much because we're being very unclear about what it means. But basically, Miles has a good excuse. Now, Miles, what's your news story, man, before we go on to the topic of the day, which is e-waste?
Well, there is a story about, this has to do with space, so I'm going to join in with John Tracy here, that Planet X is basically another planet they found that's beyond the orbit of Pluto. In fact, quite a bit beyond the orbit of Pluto by about 25%. It turns out that it's much bigger than was originally thought. It's looking to be perhaps close to the size of Mars.
Wow.
Wow, because before they were saying it was probably the same size as Sedna.
Right, in which case it's now bringing
Sedna?
Up...
Sedna?
Sorry. there's a large amount of stuff out there past Pluto, and they found some planetoids, but it begs
and
the question of, is it a planet? Is it a rock? Is it a what?
But suddenly something the size of Mars.
Right, and it's raising the question again about Pluto. Is Pluto a planet? Is it a large member of the Kuiper Belt?
Maybe they'll finally just say, you know, that's a large member of the Kuiper Belt, that's an asteroid, no big deal, but Planet X is now called Pluto. And they're just going to move the location.
Well, something significant about this is it has a moon.
Ooh.
Yeah.
A really small rock.
Yeah, it's about 1%.
Mars.
They think it's about 1 or 2% of the size of the planet. But if it's larger...
Yeah, but Pluto has a moon. It's just
Pluto's kind of like two rocks circling each other, I think.
Well, no, one actually is orbiting the other. They're actually doing the measurements.
Planet X.
Well, thank you, Miles, for that.
Is there an Apple
fascinating
connection?
And very informative news story.
Well, I'll tell you what. Instead of calling it Planet X, I'll give you the name. It's 2003 EL61. There, you happy?
That's really old. That means they found it in 2001. That's like a three-year old story.
How does that mean they found it in 2001 if they give it to 2003?
Oh, well, then there you go.
It's only 2 years old.
Okay, let's get on with the topic at hand, which, of course, is e-waste. We are lucky to have in the air room with us, which is unfortunately very rare for us to have people come down to the station. We have Jeffrey Smedberg, Recycling Programs Coordinator of the Santa Cruz Public Works Department. And Jeffrey manages, basically, as his title sounds, recycling in Santa Cruz County. Now, of course, Geek Speak is broadcast everywhere KOSP is, and that's all up and down the Central Coast and Silicon Valley. But hopefully this information will be pertinent to wherever you are. It's about managing your old computers. So, Jeffrey, thank you very much for joining us today on Geek Speak.
Well, thank you for having me on the air.
Now, there's three deposit stations, if you will, in Santa Cruz County, and all of them take, to some degree, recycling. And a big part of your job basically, is to make sure that recycling happens effectively and efficiently and all that. So you work with other organizations, like in Ben Lomond, it's the Valley Women's Club. Is that correct?
Well, yes. Actually, in Santa Cruz County, our public works department operates two disposal sites. In Ben Lomond, we have the transfer station, and outside of Watsonville, we have the Buena Vista landfill. And in addition to the sites that we operate, the city of Santa Cruz operates a disposal site just north of town on the North Coast Highway on Dimio Lane. Used to be called the city dump or the municipal landfill. Now, because of the focus on changed focus, it's now called the Municipal Resource Recovery Facility. But because that's not such a common term, we usually have to say Resource Recovery Facility,
dump.
dump, or formerly landfill.
Okay. Now,
and also, City of Watsonville now has a disposal site for residents and businesses from within the jurisdiction of the city of Watsonville, right in town, on Harvest Drive, and so that's basically four publicly operated disposal sites, and they all accept e-waste now.
Mm-hmm. Now, the e-waste thing is basically electronic waste has a lot of potential hazards in it, and you don't really want to throw it in the ground. That's the general reason why you start talking about it as a different kind of waste.
Exactly.
There's another thing that's possible, is that a lot of these old computers and stuff can be reused. So that would be recycling or reusing them prior to the e-waste problem. But let's talk about what is exactly the problem with putting this stuff in the ground. What's in it? Why don't you do it?
Well, there are a lot of materials and chemicals in electronic products that are potentially hazardous, and the California State Department of Toxic Substances Control, DTSC, is the agency, the public agency, that has the responsibility to determine what's hazardous and what's not. And when they determine something is hazardous, then it's banned from landfill disposal, and more precautions are required.
And the typical ones like motor oil.
Yeah, motor oil, mercury, for example, thermometers, and
What do you do with a thermometer if you have a thermometer that has this mercury?
Well, we do have household hazardous waste collection facilities, and they are located at all of these same disposal sites, although they're not open every day.
Mm-hmm.
At the facilities. But generally materials that are hazardous, like very strong cleaners or solvents, pool and spa chemicals.
Home batteries?
Paint.
Uh-huh.
Paint and stains. Also, garden chemicals, pesticides, things
right.
like that. Those all need to go to a household hazardous waste collection site. Now, there are some of those items, including motor oil and batteries, that are very common, and they're not quite so hazardous, and so they are generally accepted at the recycling centers at these disposal sites as well. So you can go down, say, to Buena Vista Landfill, and you've got motor oil and a car battery and some household batteries, you can drop those off at the regular recycling center any day. But if you also have paint, then you have to be sure to get there on the day that the household hazardous waste site is open.
And let's not get into the details about what you do with the chemicals. I'm very interested, actually, in what happens with that paint. But let's go ahead and talk about the computers. You don't take the computer, even though the computers have some potential hazardous things in it, you don't take those to the hazardous waste group. And why is that?
Well, it's because of the volume.
Mass volume.
Right. We handle, thousands of gallons of paint a month, but there's just those facilities aren't big enough for the house, for the computers.
Well, also paint, you just pour into a bigger container, and you just have to have that. You can't do a computer parts.
So what I was getting to was that the State Department of Toxic Substances Control, the DTSC, has determined that certain electronic products do have significant amounts of hazardous materials in them, and they are therefore banned from landfill disposal.
And the biggest one of those is the CRT.
The CRT, cathode ray tube, which is common in a computer monitor or a television.
It is the actual guts of a traditional television and a computer monitor.
Why is that? Why don't they want those in landfill?
Well, because each one has anywhere from 6 to 10 pounds of lead in the glass. And,
lead's not good.
No, it's not. Well, it's actually good in some situations. For example, I just went to the dentist the other day and got an X-ray, and I was very glad to have some lead in the room.
Which is, if I'm not mistaken, the same reason the lead's in the monitor. Shield you from some of the electromagnetic radiation produced by the...
Yes, actually it is. And it's, I don't really understand the physics of it completely. The computer monitor, or the CRT, is a glass device, and it's got the cone or the funnel part of it, and then it's got the face glass, or the screen, and most of the lead is in the funnel that keeps the radiation from going out to the side. And I'm not sure what's going on in the front of the...
Well, I know in the front they do have a guard in there. Mm-hmm. For that. But I've also been curious, with regard to lead, one of the ways that I had heard that you deal with lead is make it chemically non-reactive, in other words, encase it in glass.
Right.
So I wondered about, it's a monitor, isn't it already encased in glass?
Well, that's very fortunate for all of those of you out there listening to the show who might happen to have a computer monitor on your desk near you. You're very close to a lot of lead. And lead is hazardous because, if it gets into your body, it causes brain damage and all kinds of other physical problems. But encased in glass, it's not hazardous.
It's exactly what you want to do with lead.
Right. However, if you take that glass and you smash it up, which is exactly what's going to happen in a landfill. Because
there's tractors.
Right. The big bulldozers drive over stuff, and the whole purpose is to compress stuff as much as possible and squish it down so you can get as much garbage in there, in that hole in the ground, as you possibly can before it's full. So once the glass is broken up into very fine pieces, and moisture gets into the landfill, which we try to avoid, but some always does, then there's what's called leachate, that the moisture in the landfill connecting with all the other constituents that it picks up has a capability of leaching out the lead from these particles of glass. And then as that soaks down farther into the landfill, and the older landfills, there's no barrier at the bottom. It just goes straight into the groundwater. In modern landfills, sanitary landfills, they are engineered with barrier layers at the bottom. But, this is the year 2005, and how long is that piece of plastic at the bottom of the landfill going to last? We know that is temporary.
Right.
And so we don't want to put things in the landfill that are potentially going to be a huge hazard to future generations.
So that's the deal. The monitors crack open, so you can't landfill them. And in just a moment, we'll find out exactly what actually does happen to them. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. santacruzelectronics.com.
I'm Eric Glass. And here's a moment from an interview we did for this week's This American Life. Yeah, I mean, you don't expect pathos from lunch meat and cheese, but there you go.
There's our promo right there. But you just said it. That's it. This week on This American Life, and then you're going to say you don't expect pathos from lunch meat and cheese, except here.
That's right. Tune in.
Yeah, tune in. A piece of cheese becomes the stuff of legend this week.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
This is KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments about recycling, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can, of course, also visit geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Geek Speak. We're talking about e-waste, and we have with us Jeffrey Smedberg of the Santa Cruz County Recycling and Waste Management Department, and we're talking about what actually happens in Santa Cruz County, for example, and pretty much everywhere that there's e-waste, what the process is, and how you get rid of your stuff. In the air room with me also are geeks Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, Chris Dunphy, and John Tracy, all of which are in rapture listening to our discussion, but also joining in with questions and comments. And if you'd like to join in along with us with your comments or questions, the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can use the internet, visit geekspeak.org to ask us your question. Jeffrey, we just said that CRTs, or computer monitors and televisions, are not good things to put into landfills. So what actually happens to them?
Right, well, what we have in CRTs is glass with a lot of lead in it, and so it's no longer allowed in the landfill, and that was banned actually in 2001. We realized that we couldn't put them in the landfill anymore, so we have a contractor that that hauls those actually over to Santa Clara, and actually, the proper handling for CRTs, there's really two avenues to deal with that CRT glass. And one of them is to ship it to a lead smelter, which uses actually likes to have the silica of the glass as a flux. And so they use that when they're smelting other ore that's got lead in it, and they just throw in this CRT glass, and the silica, the glass, helps the process, and they're actually able to reclaim the lead out of the glass.
And then what happens with the glass?
I'm
not a smelting expert, right?
No, but, yeah. nor am I, and I imagine it just ends up as some kind of slag at the end of the process. But the silica itself, glass, is if it doesn't have lead in it, then it's pretty inert, neutral material.
Right.
It came right out of the ground, and so it's that then it becomes no longer hazardous. Now, the other operation is to take CRT glass and reuse it in a product that would want to have lead in the glass, such as making new CRTs. And there are a couple of plants in the United States, one in, I think, Missouri, and one in Pennsylvania or New Jersey, that actually makes new CRTs using this leaded glass as a feedstock. And still, it's not a cheap process, because it involves shipping all this heavy glass over long distances, and of course transportation is a very expensive process. So any of these handling processes are very expensive. Now, what has happened in the past, unfortunately, a lot of computer waste has been shipped overseas, a lot of it to the Far East.
Right, we
China,
saw some articles about that,
right,
in local papers about,
right,
small communities getting over, you know, all this poisonous stuff, and they're like,
right,
burning off the plastic to get the copper out and stuff.
Exactly.
Bad
exactly.
stuff.
Right.
So that's not happening anymore.
Oh, it's still happening. But the California legislature passed SB 20, the California Electronics Recycling Act, a few years back, and it finally began to be implemented at the beginning of this year, and that provides some financing source and a process to get all of the computer e-waste handled in a environmentally sensitive way. It provides money for doing the right thing with the e-waste. You still can ship computer monitors overseas if you want to avoid the state system.
Now, are you responsible for where these things go?
Well, in the sense that as I manage the program, I'm involved in letting the contracts for the companies that handle it. And we have put in provisions in our contracts with all our e-waste vendors that the materials must be processed within the United States or Canada, and that all environmental regulations must be adhered to.
So you're doing what you can before you pass off. You're making sure the contract states don't do anything bad with this, and then you hope that, of course, the company's not doing that.
Oh, and also the provision is that on request, the companies have to show us, you know, their whole downstream processes and all, you know, and that we can get reports from any subcontractors that they have.
From South County, Watsonville, e-waste question from Dave. Dave, welcome to Geek Speak.
Oh, thank you. It sounds like CRTs are a big issue, but what about the computers themselves and the and old stereo equipment, receivers, all that stuff, the 8-track player that's still sitting around? Do I have to just throw that in the landfill, or should I take that to the e-waste station as well?
That's a very good question, and we've been focusing on the CRTs because they are ones that have been declared by the state as hazardous. However, probably all electronics products have the potential and just haven't been studied enough to be to see if they've been determined as hazardous. For example, anything with a circuit board has solder in it, and most solder has lead in it. Of course, it's a smaller quantity than in a CRT. Also, computers that are tossed out probably have a battery in them, a rechargeable battery, and those are considered hazardous. Then there's the plastic housing that's got a flame retardant, maybe a brominated flame retardant, which also has hazardous characteristics.
So what
So what we do, for example, at our county facilities, we do accept the non-CRT electronic product waste, including the stereos and the PC box and the scanners and the printers and so forth. We collect those as well, and we just collect them in a different place and process them in a different way. So you can, and actually at this point, county facilities, we accept all that equipment at no charge. We do limit the number of CRTs that you can bring in, or video display devices, to 2 per day, unless you get advanced sort of permission. But all the other e-waste, we do accept at no charge.
So the question. So, Dave, do you have a lot of e-waste?
I have just accumulated a number of stereo receivers and cassette players over the years that are sitting on a pallet now, and I was just wondering what to do with them.
Sitting on a pallet, that sounds pretty serious. You have a business?
I have a business, but these are from personal pack ratting over the years.
Yeah, I have the same problem.
Stack the new one on top of the old one. And, I had another question about the household hazardous waste, and
yes.
I fall into a kind of a gray area, I guess. I've tried to participate in the, you know, go to the drop-off center during the appropriate hours, and since I do have a business, I don't have 50-gallon drums of things, but I have gallons of odd things that aren't like household things that they identify. They said, oh, well, you're a business. I'm sorry you can't leave these here. So I'm not sure quite what to do with those.
Are you driving a truck with a sign on it or something?
I actually tried to sneak in there, and they saw through it because they saw the various products that they saw.
So what does a small business do?
I cast concrete, so I make concrete countertops and things, so I have
various... Do you have bathroom floors? What's your phone number? No. Jeffrey, what does a small business like that do with their e-waste?
Well, that's a very good... I think you've figured out part of the system. If basically, the household hazardous waste program is designed and funded to provide this service of dealing with toxic materials that are generated by households, and it's not really designed to cover businesses. However, there is kind of a small business exemption if you are dealing with normal household products, just like paint and pesticides and so forth. And so there won't really be any question, you know, if it's a small quantity and it's the same type of materials that would be generated at a household. Now, you are just over the line because you happen to have a chemical that is not a common household product. So clearly identified you as a...
a business.
But more importantly, so, if I for some reason was doing some concrete casting in my house, I would consider it a household thing. But if I brought this material down, they're going to say, well, that's a material we don't handle because it's not a typical household waste. So same situation, an advanced, if you will, home user and a small business like this, what do they do with that weird... What is this chemical that we're talking about? Jeffrey, you seem to understand what it might be.
I don't know. I think the thing that might have come up was leftover polyurethane rubber for mold making, that kind of thing.
Yeah, some weird stuff, yeah.
Just weird, oddball things, yeah.
Well, we do...
Failed projects.
Right. Well, we are trying to expand our household hazardous waste program to help deal with the small businesses, and there is a squeegee, small quantity generator program, and I could just ask you to call the household hazardous waste facility and try and talk to the program manager.
And that's at Buena Vista, or where?
Well, if you call the 454-2606 number.
454-2606.
Right, and leave a message on that line and just mention that you're a small business and you want to discuss with them what to do with your material. Then they can probably help you out on an individual basis. Now, for larger businesses, I mean, we try to help out the small businesses because you're not going to have large quantities.
No.
Obviously, a large business that has some sort of production method with big truckloads of stuff that they need to dispose of, properly disposing of business waste, hazardous waste, is, you know, a business expense. And
there are private industries that do that.
Right, absolutely. There are registered waste, hazardous waste haulers, which are
expensive.
Charge a lot for the service.
Right. Dave, I don't know what to recommend for you, but it sounds like definitely contacting this 454-2606 household waste people and see if they can accommodate you to some degree. I mean, the trouble is, of course, with a small business like this, there's a lot of them around. Sometimes they go out of business and such, and that extra expense is something that, if they have to take on and they're not as conscious maybe as Dave is, they might just dump it somewhere. And that's what you really don't want to do. And that's a major reason why the household waste...
Right. I was just hoping that maybe it would be made more available to everyone. I mean, I just see it as a problem myself. I'm trying to do the right thing, and it's somewhat tricky. It seems like it would be nice to fill that gap.
Dave, thank you very much for the call. Good luck on contacting that number on household waste. Now, if you want to know more about... what Jeffrey does is with managing recycling and reuse and refuse, the email address for him and phone number are up on the GeekSpeak website for today's show. Okay, so let's go on to another question I have for you about waste. When you do get the computers, the CRTs, I understand, it's a contract, the computers, there are sometimes metal cases and there's batteries that you set in them, and that basically someone has to go through and kind of separate them. Do you have do you hire contractors to do that work as well?
Well, actually, for example, the Buena Vista site and all of the other sites, there's a lot of, at the recycling centers, there's a lot of scrap metal collected, huge volumes of scrap metal. And the scrap metal dealers do have some kind of exemption so that they are allowed to take in the mix of, scrap metal, you could throw a refrigerator. They have to have the Freon removed first, for example. But then you can throw the whole refrigerator in the scrap metal bin, and it's got more than metal in it. It's got plastic
and weird stuff.
Yeah, all the insulation.
Ice cube trays, whatever that's made of.
Yeah, right. And then, of course, scrap metal dealers deal with whole automobiles, and there's plenty of non-metal stuff in there, and they have a process of shredding it up they have what's left over is called shredder fluff, which is seat cushions and dashboards and all kinds of strange things. So they have this, according to the rules, they are allowed to take material such as a computer and just throw it in that mix and have it shredded up, and the plastics come off as part of the fluff and the... There are going to be a little bit of hazardous materials in there, but theoretically a very small quantity.
So some machine.
Oh, yeah. Huge machines that chop up whole cars and refrigerators.
Oh, my gosh. That's
so crazy. Do you take those computers then and just add it to that mix?
Yes, absolutely. Anything that's not officially designated as hazardous, we just put right in the scrap metal.
Well, what about those batteries that are in there?
Well, we encourage people to pull the batteries out before they get there.
Okay.
And some of them get out and probably some of them go in.
And I'm kind of curious also about the possibility of people doing some reuse with that equipment. So let's talk about it in just a second.
Oh, sure.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, Chris Dumphy. We are speaking, our guest today, we're speaking with Jeffrey Smedberg, Recycling Programs Coordinator for Santa Cruz Works Department. And we're talking about e-waste and waste in general, but mostly e-waste. If you have general questions about technology and you can't wait, then please give us a call. If you have questions about recycling, of course, or e-waste in general, please give us a ring and join our conversation. The phone number is 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can send us email by going to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. All right, so, yes, what about reuse?
Well, just before we get to reuse, I did want to mention that since sort of came to our attention in 2001 that, oh my gosh, we can't throw e-waste and computers in the landfill anymore. And we started stockpiling it, and then we later got a contractor. And in the last few years, we have collected and shipped out of the county to these various contractors over 500,000 pounds of electronic waste just from our couple of sites. And the caller who just called in a minute ago and said he had basically a pallet of old stereos and computers and things. This is what we call the legacy pile or the legacy
equipment.
Right. Like myself, I have a Mac Plus in the closet. I spent $1,000 on it some years ago or more.
It's hard to release that after you've put capital investment in it.
Yeah, right. And just a few years later, it's hard for me to imagine that this thing that I paid a couple thousand bucks for is not only worthless, but is a toxic hazard that's going to cost me money to get rid of.
Right, right.
So fortunately, because of this SB 20, the state recycling law, there's now this fund which helps us cover the costs of properly handling the material designated as hazardous.
For example, I mean, the CRTs, for example, for quite a while there was a fee, like $7 went up to $10, and maybe at $15 or something like that.
Right.
But because of this fund, then you have this household, and you can get two a day to get rid of. And your Mac Plus you can take and dispose of. But it works still, right?
It works still. And it's,
so you don't want to do that.
No, and it's still, all the time that I worked at it, I couldn't even learn all of its capabilities. I mean, it's still a fantastic little machine.
Why aren't you using it?
Well, because
you can't use internet on it. It's right. Not color. The mouse breaks and you have a problem. I mean, there's some things that happen, but
just the internet access is the only thing
that would
slow me down otherwise.
And
but as you say, it's still a perfectly good machine for what it was made for, and there's a lot of equipment that, you know, is put aside because it's been replaced by something a little newer, a little faster, still works fine, and maybe somebody else somewhere could perfectly well use that. And that's the whole reuse aspect.
Yeah, now one of the problems, of course, of that is that if you go up to like an eBay or even some local stores and stuff and try to find a used computer or from a friend, you can probably get something better than the Mac Plus for under $100. So we're talking like a new laptop that will run OS 10, you can probably get for about $100. So it's like, well, if you're going to be investing time in a computer and you have any kind of resources, then get one of those, right? Not
right.
Get one of this big clunky thing that uses a lot more power and is black and white and you can't access the internet on. So
right.
Who can reuse that piece of equipment? And do you have some kind of, I mean, there must be people that want it, right? Or maybe not.
Well, that's the question. I mean, I always look at this junk. I'm a scavenger at heart. I mean, how did I get into this recycling field anyway? I look at a pile of junk and I think, oh my God, what's the possibilities here?
I do the same thing and my wife hates me for it, but yeah.
Right. And fortunately, us guys usually get one closet that we can keep anything we want. Someday we have to.
We're supposed to get a closet?
You have a garage, don't you?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's an error.
Didn't you put that in your marriage contract?
Right. It's true. Geeks have hard times letting go of technology.
And, you know, it's not just geeks. I think it's pretty pretty cultural. And actually, I think it's a good characteristic to realize the value. I mean, there was human labor and resources from the earth that were put in.
And amazing technology. You can't build this thing at home. You know, it's like those things. It's just an amazing piece of technology.
Yeah, right. It's still a 420 meg hard drive.
Maybe. No, I don't think so. No. 420 meg? No. On Mac Plus, I don't think it had hard drive. We're talking floppy disk.
20. So what do we do with all this perfectly good usable stuff? Well, the list that you posted on the website is our computer recycling and reuse opportunities. Because part of when our Board of Supervisors set up the County Board of Supervisors established our county e-waste recycling program in beginning of 2002, reuse was an important part of that. We didn't want to just get all this stuff and shred it up, and we wanted to any reuse value, we wanted to capture that. And so we set up a series of or a network of community partners in the community, small businesses and nonprofit agencies and organizations that are involved in some way in reuse or refurbishment or redirecting this kind of equipment to further use. And unfortunately their success has not been that great. I mean, they can always, you know, if they get donated a fairly new piece of equipment, they can find a home for it. If it's not, you know, if it needs more than very simple fixing, you know, how much time and effort can be put into that to make it, to make somebody want to do that rather than go on eBay and get a $100 machine or go to Fry's and get a brand new thing for $200.
Right. Let's go ahead and ask Judith about her computer dilemma in Watsonville. Judith, what do you have and what are you trying to get rid of and what is it?
I have a little Mac Classic. And
is it a color classic or?
No, it's not a color classic.
We have a lot of distortion on the line with you, but are you just trying to find a home for it?
I just wanted to know, is there any way, would that be, anyone be interested in that at all?
John?
Or is that just e-waste?
Okay, so a Mac Classic. Thank you. I'm going to take you off air because it's the phone problem. But what about that, a Mac Classic? It's definitely earlier than 486 computer, and what do you think?
Right.
John?
John, do you want to get out of garage?
I used to be a school administrator for the San Jose Valley School District. One thing that happens is we get a lot of machines like this. They're, you know, as Jeffrey was saying, they can't surf the internet, so they don't meet the minimum requirements of what the schools want. So therefore, you donating that to the school just moves the problem to the schools, and schools have limited funding, so therefore trying to recycle massive amounts of donated equipment doesn't work. So if you're planning on donating anything, make sure you contact the school first. Make sure that it's something they can use. They'll usually have some minimum requirements.
Put it on eBay.
Yeah, as for the Mac Classic, put it on eBay. There's a Mac Classic 2 going for $62, or has sold for $62. There's a Color Classic going for $76.
People want those things.
If you've got the packaging,
they cover shipping costs.
Well, they cover shipping costs.
They cover shipping costs.
If you've got the packaging for it, you could probably actually get upwards of $50 for it.
You know, if someone's willing to pay for shipping to take it off my hands, and I think they're going to use it, that's the deal right there. You don't even need any money for it.
At least for a flower pot.
All right, we got another question from Carmel. Carmel Valley. Yeah, Colleen.
Hi there.
Hi, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you, and I'm so glad to hear the show. So our little Mac's been sitting up in the closet for forever and gathering dust, and we just left it there because we heard it was dangerous to try to open it up and you know, get rid of it. I appreciate your respect for the technology. I want it destroyed because, not that I didn't love it, but you know, at the time, but like you see, you've paid $3,000, and then the next year... It was very painful.
And every time it's there, it like just stabs you in the gut. You see it, you're like, oh, get this thing out of the house.
Plus which, the keyboard and the mouse are somewhere else.
Right.
So my problem is there's this machine with stuff in it. What's in it? I don't know. I don't know how important it is. But I don't want anybody else to open it up and find it.
And you're in Carm. Oh, I see what you're saying. There's data of yours on there, and you don't want anyone to get access
to it. Yeah, nothing that I probably even care about. But I just have a whole privacy thing.
What kind of Mac is it? Is it like an all-in-one with a built-in monitor?
Exactly.
Yeah, those are really hard to get the hard drives out of. You have to crack it open.
That's a great question, though. What do you do? And I know what I would do. I'd open it up and spend some time, pull the hard drive out.
But you need some special tools to get into those old ones.
You don't want to do that.
We told that was very dangerous.
It's not really dangerous. Now that it's been sitting around for a long time.
The big danger is in the CRT
discharging.
Don't
plug it in. The capacitors have been discharged by now. I'm pretty sure.
I'm just curious, like a little out of the box thinking, what about a bulk eraser and just hold it next to the case?
No. Okay, what about
this? You can't ensure that the data has been erased.
Is there any insurance when you drop a machine like this off at one of the transfer stations in Santa Cruz County, for example? Jeffrey, is there any insurance that somebody won't grab the hard drive and try to get data off of it?
Well, just in the process of how this material is handled, for example, this Mac with a built-in screen, that's going to go in the trailer with our other televisions and computer monitors, and that's going to go be shipped over to San Jose and be processed there by our company. That's, you know, they're basically bonded and they have a very good record in handling
and doing what they're doing supposed to
yeah in handling you know the security of material that's given to them. So I wouldn't worry about that, knowing who my contractor is. And for a PC that's a separate item that someone's going to drop off in the scrap metal bin, that gets thrown in with all the refrigerators and the old fence posts.
Without the CRT, it goes into a bin, gets destroyed quick with a big shredder. But with the CRT, goes to a reputable company that you personally would trust.
Yes.
And a CRT is like the
television part of it.
Okay.
The monitor. So there you go. If you want to take it to an transportation in Santa Cruz County, Jeffrey is standing by his contractor that no one else is going to look at. If you want to do something else, you could go to like an electronics store, Santa Cruz Electronics, for example, and say, I want you to take this hard drive out. I want you to ensure that hard drive data is erased completely, and I will pay for it. And they'll do it for you, but it might cost you.
Okay, and in Monterey County, I'm in Monterey
County. That's right,
you're
in Carmel Valley.
Can I come up to Santa Cruz and bring my junk?
Well, we're...
the official answer is no.
Yeah, the official answer is no, and we are, just because of jurisdictional wars, we are asking people a lot more now about where they're coming from.
Yeah, I thought so.
But Monterey's got the same deal.
Oh, sure.
No problem.
Sure.
All right, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're going to take the last call from Steve from Santa Cruz. Steve, welcome to Geek Speak, and what's your question, quick?
Yeah, hi. Two things. I hope you're going to repeat. I came in late. Hope you're going to repeat where to get a hold of this company that's taking all this stuff.
Go online to geekspeak.org and click on the link there.
Okay,
and
great.
You'll find all about it.
And the other thing is I have just so much old software, you know, stuff when you've upgraded, the old versions, old stuff that's, you know, nice to work out. What can you do with
the software? A lot of times you can donate that to companies that take in refurbished computers and give them to other people. CASA, court-appointed support.
Oh, I know CASA.
Yeah, CASA a lot of times will take used computers in to give to, you know, kids that they're watching over. One of the big problems is they want computers that are ready to go, has the software installed that they can give to people. You might want to talk to them and see who's donating their computers. Mm-hmm. And offer them that old software. Because a lot of times people have these old 486s or old Macintoshes, but they don't have the software that runs on it anymore.
Now, if you have something like Photoshop, any version of Photoshop is worth quite a bit of money because the upgrade price of the new Photoshop relies on an old copy.
Uh-huh.
So that's an interesting thing. That is a little bit more of a difficult problem, but good luck with it. And all right, thank you very much for listening. This is Geek Speak. The geeks this morning, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, Chris Dunphy. Of course, our guest is Jeffrey Smedberg of the Santa Cruz County Waste and Such. Support for this program comes from John Tracy. Yeah. Support for this program comes from Metro Santa Cruz newspaper, including a complete calendar, club grid, and dining section, arts, writing, and criticism. Metro Santa Cruz is available in Santa Cruz County every Wednesday. Jeffrey, thank you very much for joining us on Geek Speak today to talk about e-waste. To learn more about what Jeffrey does and the companies that might be able to reuse your equipment, where drop-off stations are, and all of that, it's all on our website, geekspeak.org. Jeffrey, was there anything else you wanted to say real quick?
Oh, just thank you for giving me the opportunity to share this information.
Well, thank you for being here. And remember that stuff that you throw away shouldn't necessarily be thrown away. It should be recycled. So pay attention to what you have and focus on the general world. John Tracy, you have a great mantra in your home that you're teaching your kids
What is it? Reduce, reuse, recycle.
First thing, don't use as much of it. And
yeah, in that order, first thing is reduce the amount you consume.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Selkell Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.org. No, santacruzelectronics.com. The Geeks this morning, thank you very much for being here. Coming up next is Open Road with Dean Monroe, and at 1 p.m., Two Steps in the Blues with Charlie Lang. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, or on the web at kusp.org. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. I'll be out next week. Miles has taken over the show, and I'll be back 2 weeks from now. And thank you for listening to GeekSpeak.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A total of 6 people have been arrested in connection with last week's attempted bombings in London. 5 people were detained in London, a 6th person in Rome. NPR's David Sweeney has more from London.
London police are describing today as their best day yet